This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled A Forbidden Boundary. And my author who joins me from Washington State in the United States of America, Shauna Springs. Welcome to the program, Shauna.
Thanks for having me.
This is a novel, I would say an extensive read, 502 pages. That must have taken a long time to put together. How did you go about coming up with this story, and what is the forbidden boundary in your book?
Honestly, it took me a couple years to write, and storyline is honestly something I just thought up one day.
Just came to you in a. I've had some authors that have eaten overeaten some bad food, and it caused them to go into a hypnotic state, and they came up with a storyline. This is not what happened to you, though.
No, not particularly.
And where is this story set, and what time frame?
It's set in, well, specifically Newark, New Jersey in 1902, 1903.
All right. And you live in Washington State. Did you, in your other part of your life, live in New Jersey, or is this just a state in the United States that interested you?
It was just a place, honestly, that interested me. I wanted my book to take place on the East Coast.
Very good.
Where I chose.
Your cover has a Victorian-looking home, so this was set in the early 1900s. Describe for my listeners your main characters and how you developed them. Did you have a story outline when you began, or did just your story begin with inspiration and you started writing from there?
I would say it began with inspiration and started from there.
And as you progressed through the story, you have noted that this is sort of a romance novel. Is it easy for you to talk about the romance that's in the book? Is it between two young people, older people? What is the name of your characters, your primary characters?
Well, the main protagonist, her name is Marianne Winters, and she's 18, 19 years old in the story.
Excellent. And you do have a guy that's, I think, also chasing her, so if I may use that word.
Yes.
Pursuing her, I guess, would be a more genteel approach. He was pursuing her in the 1900s. And what was his name?
Edward Bailey.
Edward is the pursuing guy.
He's the same age.
Ah. Is the story, is there anything in here besides the romance? Is there an adventure associated with this? Is it primarily character-driven, or is it story-driven with a little adventure and maybe some other things thrown in?
Well, it does have some other things thrown in. There is a little bit of mystery to it, because later on in the story, Marianne gets engaged, and she doesn't like the guy.
Was this an arranged marriage? It sounds like it might have been.
Yes, it was.
An arranged marriage. That did happen back in the early 1900s. When you began the story, did you decide after beginning that perhaps a little research into the products that were available in that time frame and other things were necessary to round out the story?
Yes, I did have to do research on the time period. Yes.
I did notice you had mentioned the company or the product Jell-O in there, and I was curious personally and went back and checked, and yes, Jell-O was becoming a household name in the early 1900s, so that was a relief to find that out. Of course, I didn't know for sure. Did you know that as you began and used the Jell-O product in your story?
Yes, I did. I actually looked that up.
And the adventure part of your story and the mystery, is it only, I guess, encompassing the romantic side of your storyline, or are there other adventures and mysteries that are involved in the total tale?
Well, I wouldn't really say there's other, like, mysteries or adventures, but there is a point in the story where Edward is fired, and then he later on gets sick, and Marianne thinks she's dying, but in the end, there's a surprise in this story.
Don't want to tell the surprise, because that would then people would go to the back of the book or go to your website and not maybe purchase the book. A Forbidden Boundary is a unique title. What is that referring to, if I may ask?
Well, I think there's several different ways to interpret it if you read the story, but mostly I meant it for the relationship type aspect.
And is there some heat in your story? That's probably the wrong term. The romance, does it get intense in the relationship?
I would say a little bit, yes.
Mm-hmm. And because of that, how would you describe the ideal reader of your novel? Is this a story that may appeal to guys, or is it more of what's called a chick lit or a chick flick or a chick story?
I would honestly say more of a chick story.
So ladies are going to enjoy this and be swept away into the romance that you have created, you hope.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How long have you wanted to be an author and decided that now's the time to begin writing?
I wanted to be an author for as long as I can remember.
Did you have encouragers, teachers, or other family members, perhaps, that pointed you in that direction or gave you an opportunity to share ideas and stories?
Tell you the truth, not really. I just have always had an active, vivid imagination. But my parents always did encourage me to follow my dreams. So you could say I had that behind me.
Had that encouraged you. A lot of my authors will keep journals and keep stories or ideas on paper and then use those for the storyline later, perhaps as they're developing a novel. Are you one of those individuals that has other writings that are being kept or being documented maybe in a journal?
Well, I'm kind of trying to. I've always been the type that keeps it in my head, but sometimes I'm forgetful and the ideas leave me, so I find it better if I write them down.
Sure.
That's what I've been doing.
Wonderful. How long have you been pursuing the writing aspects of your career?
Well, I'm a brand new author, so not very long.
Not very long.
I started writing a Forbidden Boundary around 2011.
So that's a fairly quick turnaround, I would say, for a 500-page novel. Were there any challenges that you had to overcome to get this to a point where you were happy with it and decided it's time to publish?
Well, I've always had a severe case of writer's block. I've always had to overcome that.
And that took a little while then. That's perhaps some of the delay that you experienced.
Oh, yes, a lot. Especially if you work full-time, yeah.
Writer's
block is always a problem.
Sure, you have other activities that keep you busy then.
Well, yes.
Okay. And the book itself, is there an underlying theme besides the romance side of it? Is there a moral or some other issue that popped to the surface once it was completed and others started to read it?
I would say no, not really.
You didn't have any particular thought in mind of trying to straighten someone out through the novel and through the characters that you accomplished or that you created?
No, I wouldn't say so.
So primarily this was written as an entertainment venue for readers?
Yes.
Wonderful. And what age range do you think would be appropriate on this book? Do you think would enjoy reading it and find it fascinating?
I would say anyone 18 and above.
Very good. Have you decided that this was a fun enough adventure that you want to continue being a writer, and do you have another project in the works?
Yes, I would like to write more books, and I'm, trying to get the second one started. Again, I have another case of writer's block.
Perhaps after
I'm working all the time.
Well, that will slow you down, but being an author is a challenge to anyone, even the most creative of writers. I only have met one writer who I think was able to knock out one book a month, or I heard of an author that actually completes a novel once a month. But I don't believe the storyline or the plot lines are very involved. I think they're pretty much straight imagination and a lot of cream and sugar thrown on top of it. So this one, with 502 pages, that's an extensive writing opportunity and endeavor. So congratulations on completing this. The name of the book, again, is A Forbidden Boundary. My author is Shauna Springs, S-H-A-U-N-A, Springs, just like it sounds. Shauna, where can my listeners get a copy of your book or learn more about it?
Well, it's available on Amazon.com and on BalboaPress.com.
Wonderful. And if they do a search under your name, if you don't have a website developed yet, which I think is the case, they will be able to get in touch with you in the future because this interview will be around for the next 40 or 50 years. So they can do a search under your name, Shauna Springs, S-H-A-U-N-A, Springs, author, and under the title of the book, A Forbidden Boundary. Thank you, Shauna, for joining me today and sharing your story.
You're welcome.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Arthur.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
The title of the book, Arrogant Agitation, Pleasure and Struggle in the 1960s. And the author is Anna Bombeck. And Anna joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. And this interview is brought to you by Archway Publishing. Hello, Anna.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. Arrogant Agitation. You say this is a story of a poor farm girl with a narrow parochial education attempting to escape her background, become well-educated, and therefore keep the university-educated man of her dreams during the chaotic 1960s. They certainly were chaotic.
They were. They weren't as chaotic in the beginning of the 60s, and so I'm hoping I caught some of that where it was just beginning to get going.
And so why the fascination? Why did you want to focus with this kind of, I guess, backdrop and develop your characters?
Well, I have this pressing desire to capture a unique period of time during the early 1960s when social morals and beliefs that considered to be rock solid were being challenged or questioned on so many levels. That, you know, women were asking for to have sex before marriage, and the blacks wanted fair treatment, and the very definition, role, and existence of God was often in question. And so in the book, the changing belief systems were being lived out by a unique group of four young people, and they were all just out of college or still attending. They met, first of all, at an Air Force base, and they immediately struck up the friendship, and this seemed to test the limits of friendship most of the time, but they always did it with joviality. This group is represented by four different religious positions and four different social backgrounds, and what drew them together was a desire or need to question almost everything because things were just changing so fast, and people felt like they were drifting. So I told the story of this group and this time through the romance, which was an unintended love, that two of this group had together, and inspires that farm girl with the narrow parochial background who absolutely seemed to know nothing. I've used that romance between the frat educated guy and her to tell the story.
She goes off to the University of California at Berkeley and meets the romance of her life.
No, she meets him before that and ends up at Berkeley in order to continue developing herself so that she can keep him, because she's way back there in the, she's very back there in the early 50s in her mind, and probably worse than that, because she's never been out socially or done much of anything, and she's had this very narrow education where, you know, you go and you read the Bible and you learn, you know, math and reading and all that sort of stuff, but you don't have a knowledge of a lot of people outside of the one faith. And so she's trying to become knowledgeable about the world and do it all very quickly, and in this process ends up at Berkeley.
So,
which was, you know, it turned out to be an incredible thing for her.
Tell us a little bit about each one of them. We have a Christian Scientist, Seventh-day Adventist, Jewish, and an atheist.
Yes, so you have the Christian Scientist is the frat boy, and he's just out of college, and he, you know, has done all these things in college that he just thought were wonderful, and then the poor guy falls in love with this girl, and he's kind of his character is kind of wishy-washy, doesn't know if he wants to do this or that. He's full of what he wants to do, but he doesn't know what it will be, and so he's kind of drifts in and out of where he might go or what he might do. And the Jewish fella, he's very determined. He knows what he's going to be doing. He's going to be, you know, in some business or something, and he's going to he knows where he's going, and he doesn't have time for a lot of this other stuff. But then there's the atheist who is the relaxed one. He's happy with life and whatever's going on around him, and looking at the rest of us and you know, going or looking at the rest of them and saying, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, you guys are crazy. And the Seventh-day Adventist is the girl in there, and so she's, you know, she doesn't, there's a lot of things she doesn't eat, there's things she doesn't drink, she doesn't dance, she doesn't play cards. She's very held back. And plus, she comes from a poor farming background, so she's just held back everywhere there. And so those are the four main characters that make up the book. There's other people that come into this group and come and go out of the group, but those are the four that stay.
Now, in your portrayal of them, you have them talking to each other in a very sarcastic way, a humorous way. Why did you take that approach?
Well, because I based the book on a true story, and I tried to stay accurate with a lot of that. And so that is kind of how this story came to be, was because that interaction did exist. And there was all that questioning, there was all that laughter, there was all that need to question and be inquisitive, and constant amusement came out of all of it. But still, everybody was thinking during all this interplay. So I tried to stay with the story, but of course I had to change events, some events and personalities, not the personalities so much as the character giving more events and more development of the character to create intrigue or a situation to make a point, those kinds of things. So That's my four main characters.
And it's part of your philosophy, too, it seems, because you believe that we should be able to associate with those of different beliefs, religious or political, you know, and have give and take, and just make it interesting, make life interesting and fun.
Exactly. I think that the best part of the world comes from people holding different ideas, different social backgrounds, different religions, different careers. I think we should all be able to associate with those of whatever their opinion is, their different beliefs, whether it's religious or political or just whether they liked a book, because that give and take makes life so much more interesting and fun. If we're all the same, we're pretty dull, and then there's no creative, intelligent growth. So one of the most important things I would hope people would take away from reading the book was just how unique that group was and how they benefited from the interplay between the different backgrounds and different beliefs and all that. I think that they all came out bigger people, and it's actually hard for me to think that someone would read through the whole book and not pause to think while they're reading.
Well, and it is so important for us to learn to appreciate each other's differences, because we can all learn from each other.
Exactly. It keeps things interesting and exciting and amusing sometimes. If you can get into an argument with someone, you know, it's not really an argument, but a good discussion, you know, where you're just opposing, and you have all this opposition going back and forth. And if you can do that and still be friends with that person, what a wonderful thing. You know, what a wonderful thing that is.
I guess that's the definition of true friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
exactly.
When you can respect each other even in our differences.
Right. It's so important. Yes. So this is in the book, you know, it's fairly amusing. All the interplay and everything is amusing, but there's always things, messages being delivered. And that's how this group in real life, that's what they did. You know, they would poke at someone because they didn't like them, but the other person would just poke back, or everyone would just laugh. And then, you know, but I think that everybody came out changed.
And in the process, they could do that because they knew they were accepted. They felt
exactly.
Secure.
Yes, they were very secure in the group. They knew their place in the group was not going anywhere. It was there, and they could say whatever they wanted. And they might be pounced upon. That's fine. But they would end up laughing and maybe still walk away with their own beliefs, or maybe change just a little bit. Or maybe they would change someone. But it just kept that group exciting to be around. Great group of people.
What would you say was the most challenging part about writing your book?
Oh dear, people ask me that all the time, and I say sex. Writing about sex was the most challenging because it's like how to present it, how not to, and I wanted it to be lovely. I wanted it to be touching, and not too graphic. And I didn't want to rob the imagination of the reader. I wanted to leave it up to the reader what they saw or thought they saw, because I think they do a better job. When it gets too graphic, it kind of takes stuff away from it.
And what was the most rewarding?
The most rewarding was watching the girl become an adult, find her own mind, and differ with people. And, you know, no matter what the subject, she eventually became this whole new person, and just watching her get there was the most rewarding part. And it's like, you know, putting it down on paper and then going back and rereading it, you see more about what happened. So that was the most rewarding.
We've been listening to Anna Bomback. She's the author of her book, Arrogant Agitation: Pleasure and Struggle in the 1960s. Anna, what's the best way to get your book?
Right now, you can get it on Amazon. It's available hardback, paperback, and you can download it, or you could get it on Barnes & Noble or go to your local bookstore and order it. I don't think it's out in bookstores just yet, so we'll have to. That's the way you can get it, though.
Thank you so much, Anna, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you. I've loved it.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Archway Publishing.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Do you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the Living Room, a place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Love on the Rocks, a Positano Tale. And joining me from California is author Katie Costa. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Good morning.
Good to visit with you. I want to ask a question about a Positano tale. My listeners may or may not be familiar with what that represents. Is that the name of a detective, perhaps?
Oh, I'm sorry, what? A detective?
the name Positano. It sounds like it could be the name of a detective. It's not, though, is it?
Well, no. There's a lot of mystery, I guess, to the two characters who are visiting Positano, but it's not a detective tale.
So Positano is actually a location.
It is, yes. It's on the Amalfi Coast in Italy.
In Italy. And how did you become familiar with the Positano area in Italy?
I had traveled there quite a few times with friends over summer vacation, and then one summer one of my really good friends that I've known since high school, we decided to rent an apartment there and spend a good part of the summer living there.
Then what usually happens in Europe and in Italy, at least emotionally, is that you get attached either to the country or to the atmosphere, and perhaps romance ensues. Is that what this story is about?
Yeah, I think so. I think the two characters kind of were looking for a getaway from kind of humdrum social lives and different dilemmas that they had going on at home, and Italy just seemed like the perfect kind of escape for them. There was some romance. I mean, they met some people and actually made friends, and it was just kind of, you know, getting into a new culture and something different than the American culture that they were from, which made it all the more intriguing.
It's absolutely a gorgeous area. And again, my question at the front end was just to get the listeners' attention that this is a special area in Italy. Share with my listeners your impression geographically, and what would they see if they went to Positano?
Well, it's this amazing town that's built into the side of a cliff, really, overlooking the Tyrrhenian Sea. And it is just beautiful. I mean, it really is enchanting. And it's a town filled with staircases and alleyways and pastel-colored buildings. And it's just beautiful. The water is beautiful. And it's just, once you go there, you are just kind of mesmerized by the beauty of it.
Any uniqueness to the culture or the people of Positano?
They're all very, very friendly. But I found that, you know, all over my traveling in Italy, the people are wonderful and very open to you know, tourists, because a lot of times that's their livelihood. But just really friendly and welcoming and inviting.
Katie, you have written 468 pages. I will mention for my listeners that you are also an educator. That would give you a little bit of time, perhaps, to embark on a writing career. When did this book begin as far as the outline and the story, and how long did it take to complete?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I started it about 9 years ago.
Okay.
But it didn't take me 9 years to write. It took me about 3 years once I got started, because with working, it's hard to carve out time when you're teaching. So a lot of my writing was spent during the weekend. And then I kind of took a break from it because I'd been working out for a while and worked on other projects, and then came back to this about a year ago and decided to get it published.
Has writing and creative endeavors been a passion of yours for a long time?
Yes, I've always liked to write. Even when I was, you know, in grammar school, I liked to write stories and plays. And whenever my family traveled, I kept a travel journal. So that kind of fed into me continuing that as an adult and taking note of things I notice when I'm traveling and observations and good stories. And that kind of led into a lot of what's in the book.
Positano is an area that you have visited more than once, I'm thinking.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And
quite a few summers and even a New Year's Eve.
Really? The story has the outline of two best friends, Kit and Bridget. Share what you have crafted for them in the storyline. How did they get together? How did they become best friends? Is this sort of autobiographical in its nature? In a fictional way.
It is. It is to a certain extent very autobiographical, with a bunch of made up things added into the mix. But Kit and Bridget have been friends since high school, and they're both teachers and not married, and kind of that category of not married, not dating anybody, have the ability to travel during the summer. And they're both trying to kind of escape different issues that they each have going on, and decide to go to Italy. So, and they'd been a couple summers before and decided that this year they were really going to just submerge themselves and the culture of Positano and try to live there like locals. Didn't go quite according to plan, though.
Your story, if you were to describe the ideal reader of your tale, who would that be?
I would say females, or anywhere from 20s to 70s. I know it's kind of a broad range, but I've had people of all those different ages read it and give me really good feedback. So I think it's a story that women of all ages can kind of resonate with. And if you like to travel, too, I mean, and you love Italy and you've been to Positano, it kind of brings you back right into the little town.
Any guys read your book and given feedback yet?
I actually have had a few. They've found it kind of entertaining. I mean, maybe they're seeing it from a girl's perspective, so maybe that's a little interesting. I'm sure it's not naturally something they would pick up to read
right.
of their book choice, but, I've actually gotten some good feedback from the few men that I know that have read it.
So in the
nice.
In the storyline itself, no car chases or violence, that's obvious.
No, there's no violence. There are a few mopeds, Vespas.
Well,
but,
that could be exciting.
Nothing crazy in the sense of car chases.
Which of the scenes do you think is one that you enjoyed writing the most and sharing with an audience?
Oh, my goodness. There's a scene where the characters are taking a boat trip and they're in the Blue Grotto, and that's kind of fun. There's just a lot of, you know, funny things that happen, and I enjoyed kind of coming up with the ending. I don't want to give too much away about the ending, but it definitely takes, there are quite a few unexpected twists and turns in the storyline, so I think readers will be a little bit surprised when they read that and enjoy it and wonder about the characters and wonder what's going to happen to them next.
You've mentioned that you are a creative by nature and a person who has a passion for writing. Is this left open-ended, perhaps, so that you can continue their story, or are you working on another project?
When I wrote the story, I didn't intend to do a sequel, but the way it ended up really kind of left it open. I could do one. I haven't been working on that right now. I've been working on kind of a creative memoir type story about dating and dating in your 30s. So that's what I've been working on right now.
That's what you're working
on. I could definitely come back to Positano.
And are you planning just on a personal level, returning to Italy for more R&R?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it wouldn't be until my next summer vacation.
Right.
This is a while away.
And is Positano also on that list of travel destinations?
Yes, I haven't been in about 4 years. I do miss it, so I'd like to go back.
You have described Positano as a village or city that's built on a hill, and you have titled it Love on the Rocks. Are there double meanings in that title?
Yes, there are. The beach is, it's on the sandy beach, but it's very rocky. And then it's just kind of, I guess, a metaphor for, you know, love gone haywire and the rocks in the town and the town being built into the rocks. And so it just seemed appropriate.
Is there a message that was maybe designed or not designed that popped through when you completed the book? You look back and say, well, there's kind of a moral to this story that I didn't intend to share, or I did, and it actually shows up.
I think there are a couple, but friendship between women, having each other's back, and also about appreciation for other cultures and not only appreciating other cultures, but appreciating the things that you have as well. I think those are some themes that are kind of underlined. And being strong and getting up when you fall down.
Absolutely. This is conversationally driven, this story, then.
Yes, very conversationally.
And,
a lot of dialogue.
Yes, and 468 pages, that's a lengthy process for a first. Is this your first novel?
It is my first novel.
First novel. Congratulations on completing it. The title, again, is Love on the Rocks, a Positano tale by Katie Costa. I'm sorry, I'm wanting to say Costa because I have a neighbor, and I refer to him by A. Costa. Your name is Costa, C-O-S-T-A, first name,
yes.
C-A-T-I-E. Katie,
yes.
How do my listeners keep in contact with you? Have you established a fan page anywhere, or do they just...
I do. I have... There's a fan page on Positano, sorry, on Facebook. If you type in facebook.com/Positano Tale, and then I have a website. It's www.positanotale.com.
Fabulous. And Positano is spelled P-O-S-I-T-A-N-O. And tail is like not the attachment to a dog or cat. It's T-A-L-E. Right. Now, how can I get a copy of your book?
It's available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Lulu.com, and hopefully to be in books, physically in bookstores. But right now the best bet is to buy it online.
Well, best of luck with this book, Love on the Rocks, a Positano tale, and also on your future endeavors. We hope to hear from you again and are anxious to see how your writing career progresses. I know your teaching and education career is very important to you, and that takes a lot of your time, but we love hearing about your progress. Thank you again for sharing that with us today.
Thank you.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.